It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. 865-524-5888 online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted since 1999 for roofing, siding, windows, or garage. You can contact our friends, Exterior Home Solutions, today. They're going to take care of you. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Rob Lewis. Got a lot in store here for today's show, as Tennessee's coming off its second bye week of the year, getting ready for dark mode, night at Neyland against Kentucky, Saturday night, 7:45 is the kick on the SEC Network. First, what do we know in general? Not much. What do we know heading into the month of November? I want to get into college football playoff implications and some other teams in this conversation, but let's start, Brent, with Tennessee. What do we know about Tennessee?
We know their defense is good enough to travel against anybody in the country, I think, based on what we've seen to this point. That's what the evidence to me shows. I think the question about Tennessee is how much does their offense grow, Austin, over the course of the next couple of weeks before you go to Athens, Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the question we just don't know the answer to, right? Because obviously the offense has shown flashes, and they've had, you know, a lot of people running open the last few weeks, but they failed to execute in the first half. Can they put a complete game together? I think what we do know is Tennessee controls its own destiny as we reach the month of November. And if you had said that before the season started, I think you're taking it. And now it's up to Tennessee to go out and week by week try to check them off. As Hub said in the two-minute drill on Monday, you know, you can't win week three this week. You got to win week one this week. And it's the first of five coming up against Kentucky.
Here's the other thing too, Rob Lewis, and you can't do anything about it. What you also know is that Arkansas loss is just more and more painful with each passing.
Well, we said that would happen, right? We said that in the two-minute drill postgame. That's going to be something that rears its ugly head.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it. Right. I mean, you said it at the time, but like AP said, even with that stumble, I mean, Tennessee still controls their own destiny. I mean, the SEC is, you know, kind of an eat your own league. I mean, it's not to the point where two losses is going to be, you know, damning. Although, you know, obviously it's not ideal, but yeah, you guys called it in the immediate aftermath of that game. And, you know, we're sitting here a month later and it rings exactly true.
So Tennessee controls its own destiny, of course, you know, when the game's left on the schedule, of course, that includes a game in Athens against Georgia on November the 16th. Tennessee finishes the regular season as an 11-1 ball club, and Tennessee's going to the college football playoffs. Say you lose a game between now and then, whether that's Georgia or whatever. I mean, obviously Georgia's the biggest game left remaining. Say Tennessee's 10-2, then obviously playing, you know, jockeying for playoff position with a number of other programs. So let's kind of work our way through these other programs on what we know about these teams in November. Are they real? Are they fake? Let's start with probably the most impressive team from this past weekend in the Southeastern Conference. And Austin, that's Texas A&M. A really, really big win over LSU. Benched starting quarterback, brought in Marcel Reed. That was a boost from the bench in the run game. What do we know about Texas A&M, and what does Texas A&M look in terms of postseason aspirations?
We know they seem like a good disciplined football team that plays good defense. They run the ball pretty well. At quarterback, they've been topsy-turvy because Connor Wegman and Marcel Reed have kind of bounced back and forth. You know, even in Marcel Reed's starts, he wasn't a super dynamic passer. I mean, I know Kirk Herbstreit, you know, kept talking about how much he could spin it and how the whole league ought to be scared. I mean, like, it's like the kid hadn't played. Wade, he has played. And, you know, Marcel's a fantastic player. But I do think there are a little bit of limitations there, you know, in the throw game. And he'll get tested this week. I mean, a night game in Columbia, the Vols found out 2 years ago in the month of November, is a tough place to play. And I think that's if they go and win that game, I think it's a really good win for Texas A&M. And that means the biggest remaining target they'll have is Texas. But they're real. They're real. They're a real contender. But they could be kind of on the outside looking in if they don't win this week, because I think ultimately, you know, that loss to South Carolina would be a hiccup for the Aggies.
What about the team that it beat, LSU? LSU now has two losses, you know, lost to USC earlier in the season, now lost to A&M. And you look at what LSU has coming up, you know, this upcoming week, or I guess
they're off, I believe. And then they play Alabama.
Yeah, got to play Alabama, and that will be a true elimination game. Brent Hubbs, is LSU real or fake? Kind of, where are they in terms of this jockeying for playoff position amongst what could be a number of 10-2 teams around the country and from the SEC?
Well, at halftime, I thought they were real, and I thought their quarterback play was as good as anybody had in the country. With what I mean, he threw for nearly 300 yards in the first half in College Station.
He did.
I mean, there was nothing about their offense. All you thought about them at the half was just some missed opportunities. Obviously, they were a disaster in the kicking game, and they missed some chances there. The head scratcher to them is, I mean, what was that in the second half offensively? Give Texas A&M credit. They obviously made some adjustments and did some things, but holy smokes. I mean, that was – and I think that's the beauty of college football, Rob, is – it's no longer overreaction Monday. It's overreaction quarter. It's overreaction half. You know what I mean? And so is LSU as good as they were in the first half? Are they that good? I don't know. Are they as bad as they were in the second half? Probably not. So where are they in the middle? I think that this is why this month is going to be so wild, because you are going to have some teams have a chance to separate themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to hate on LSU. I mean, I think they're okay, but as a college football playoff contender, I don't buy it. I know, man, what happened the first week of the season, you have to discount some of that. But, man, that loss, you talk about Tennessee's loss to Arkansas looking bad. How bad does that loss to USC look? I mean, you know, 2 months later. And, again, I know a lot changes. But, you know, LSU's lucky that was even a marquee matchup. I mean, they – what kind of a gift did they get at South Carolina? I mean, that was – they're fortunate that was, you know, a national – a game with that kind of national prominence. But, I just think they're okay. I mean, I think – I'm kind of surprised that they are not further along with Brian Kelly. What is this, year three? I thought they would be a little more established. But I'll say my biggest thought from that game is – That just emphasizes Texas A&M, how important it is to get the right fit and not the sexiest hire as your head football coach. Because Mike Elko, man, that's – anybody get better PR from this weekend than Mike Elko coming out of that?
No.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, that's a fan base that's happy with their head football coach right now.
Well, that's a fan base and a donor base that made that hire happen, because that was going a different direction, right? I mean, was that not – Mark, was that Mark Stoops at one point as the guy, and some money people said, no, we want our guy in here and get Mike Elko. And that's how he ended up with the job. And then he takes a shot at Jimbo Fisher. And you're right, Rob. I mean, it is all about fit. And, you know, he certainly looks the part and has them. They're not clear of the field by any means, but coming out of this weekend, they're the buzz team in the SEC right now. So we'll see.
I want to look at a team that probably was overhyped from the get-go. Two losses, clearly not out of it, but the way those two – we talk about style points. Tennessee needs some style points, and you know we'll continue that conversation on the Rocky Top Roundtable later this week. Missouri has gotten blown out in its two losses.
I think they're out of it. I think that's where I would tell you they're out of it. They have no chance. They can win them out, and they're not getting in.
Yeah, they got games against Oklahoma, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, and against Arkansas. So, I mean, clearly they can win those games, but because they've lost the way they've lost, as you just pointed out, AP, I think they're done.
Well, I mean, when Brady Cook's healthy, they haven't been good offensively, Rob. And if he's not healthy, they're going nowhere offensively. I don't think they're going to be able to score to give themselves a chance to win games. I think they've got, of all the teams left, they've got the most losses. It feels like looming in the month of November of anybody.
Got my first mute victim. I'm sorry. I just want to say, Hubbard, I'm surprised that their offense is maybe anything would break. You know, not that they would be great, but
they looked invincible last year.
You thought they'd be competent and efficient, and they're not. I mean, they're not explosive. I mean, even with Burden and Brady Cook experience at quarterback, I mean, they're bottom third of the SEC in total offense and scoring.
Well, and if you're Tennessee, like the one game you need them to lose is you need Arkansas to win some of these games down the stretch. You know, now they're sitting at five. They're going to win that. They get that cupcake in a week or so. That's six. But I mean, they play Texas at home. They play Missouri, and then I can't remember the other one that they play. Is it Ole Miss this weekend? I think maybe Ole Miss this weekend.
Arkansas has got Ole Miss this weekend, then Texas, Louisiana Tech, and then at Mizzou. Yeah.
Okay, so, but like, I think you need them to win that game at Mizzou. You know, where's Mizzou at, you know, mentally, or where's Brady Cook at health wise? You know, at the end of the year,
well, they're going bowling. They're going bowling.
Yeah,
they got their shirts, so they're you know where they're going. They're going bowling, AP. But
to 7-10 split.
Yeah, but to your point, you're exactly right. I mean, where are they? Where are some of these? That's again the big picture of what makes November really, really intriguing. Who wants to play spoiler? Who wants to try to play spoiler? And who's just trying to get done?
Well, I mean, like Southern Cal. Everybody wants Notre Dame to lose one more because, you know, at this point, the way it's all trickled out, the Northern Illinois loss wasn't the death knell people thought it might be back in September. So you need them to, if you're all these teams that are potentially fringe teams, you know, if Tennessee runs stable, they're in, right? But let's say they don't, they're 10-2. You might need some help. You know, you need Southern Cal to be motivated at the end of the month. You know, I mean, Southern Cal is capable. They're also capable of getting beat by 3 touchdowns by Notre Dame. So, you know, all those teams that you're talking about playing spoiler, how motivated are they? How many of their key players are willing to play? You know, because how many of them just go, you know, I'm getting ready for the draft. I'm going to fake an ankle injury and set out here at the end of the year.
Yeah, see, I think that's a big offshoot. I mean, we've seen a little bit of it, but I never really thought the playoff would cheapen the regular season, and it hasn't. I mean, there's tons of interest because all these teams, but I think you're going to see a lot of that in November. That, you know, teams that are on the fringe. I mean, how fired up are they about going to, you know, the Texas Bowl when, you know, they were in the playoff hunt in September? I think that's going to be not uncommon.
Yeah, and the other fly in the ointment in this deal that's not just Notre Dame when you go outside the league is the ACC.
Yes.
You know, I mean that review in Coral Gables on Friday night or Thursday night or whatever it was when Virginia Tech and Miami play looms large, right? I mean, the fact that you overturned that deal, you're sitting there now. I had thought in September the ACC was a one-team league in terms of playoff, but I mean, they're sitting in a position that they can certainly get 2 teams in. I mean, that's very realistic from where the ACC is right now, and that you know, for the SEC, that messes up your number. You know, for all the talk about the SEC is going to get 6 or what? I mean, what, 4? I mean, is that realistic at this point?
4 at the most. I think what you have to have happen, you can't, if for the SEC, one, Indiana, you know, the Big Ten needs to get 3, you know, or the SEC can't afford the ACC to get 2 plus Notre Dame. Like, you could do ACC 1 and Notre Dame, or no Notre Dame and ACC get 2, but you can't have them get 2 and Notre Dame get in. That's where the SEC ends up losing a spot, in my opinion, you know, down the stretch. So you're right. Like, either you want Miami to run the table, go undefeated, give Clemson a second loss, which, I mean, you know, potentially pushes them out, or you need Miami to lose a game between now and the end of the regular season, and then basically it's a win and you're in, lose and you're maybe in, maybe out, like fringe type team. 2-loss Miami or 2-loss Clemson. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, you got Pitt sitting there undefeated too. I mean, like, you know, at some point, of course, the rubber's going to meet the road when Clemson plays Pitt, you know, here in a couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, Clemson, Miami, Indiana. I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan, you need Michigan State to rise up and beat a team like it happened in 98 when Michigan State beat Ohio State, you know, or, you know, and again, all this is predicated on Clemson losing in Athens, right? If Tennessee wins, they're in. They're probably in Atlanta, even with tiebreakers. They're probably going to be in Atlanta because they're going to be high enough, you know, in the ratings. But, I mean, there's still some trickle-down effect here on some of these games. It's why you want a little bit of chaos if you're the Vols.
So, yeah, you want to root for Army to beat Notre Dame. You want to root for USC to beat Notre Dame. Look at that number 14 team right there on the graphic. It's Alabama. Of course, Tennessee beat Alabama. Alabama earlier in the year beat Georgia. Alabama responded the right way, 34-0 over Missouri. Will be off, and then that game we referenced that is a true elimination game. No ifs, ands, buts about it. In 2 weeks, LSU and Alabama. ESPN Power Football Index loves Alabama. Everybody doing these projections still really like Alabama. Where are you guys with Alabama right now, especially if they win against LSU?
I mean, if you beat LSU, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're still Alabama. They're still going to get a lot of, I guess, praise and notoriety there. I mean, my thing with them and LSU is, can they stop the LSU passing attack? You know, with where that secondary is, I don't think there's anything elite about Alabama right now. I mean, I think Alabama's sitting where they are and getting the love that they're getting because they're Alabama, more so than what their resume looks like or what they look like on the field. I mean, it's kind of like a little bit of the what we saw in Texas A&M and LSU as well. I mean, Alabama's living off one elite half of football. They were elite in two quarters of football against Georgia. They haven't come close to playing to near that level since then. In my opinion, AP.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, I mean, if you're Tennessee, though, I think, don't you need them to win? That's your best quality win.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting Saturday night. I was actually at a wedding, and at the reception, I had my phone pulled up, and I was watching the Alabama game, and somebody was like, well, what's the score? And I was like, you know, whatever. And like, who do you want to win this game? I was like, well, I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan, as weird as it sounds, as weird and awful, I mean, you kind of need Alabama to keep going. Because, I mean, again, that's your best win. And if Alabama beats LSU in a couple weeks, that's a big win for Alabama, a team that you own a tiebreaker over, and so on and so forth.
If you're Tennessee, do you also root for Penn State this weekend? Like, go ahead and give Ohio State a second loss instead of muddying things up? Or do you just need to worry about, okay, the SEC is going to get X amount of teams, Tennessee's got to be in that amount of teams, right?
Muddy
like,
it up.
I mean, it's sometimes how I'm kind of thinking about it from a standpoint of like, okay, if the SEC is getting three, Tennessee's got to be in the top three. Or if the SEC is getting four, Tennessee's got to be in the top four in the league instead of worrying about what, because the Big Ten's going to get X amount, right? So, like, does it matter if Penn State's got a loss and Ohio State's got a loss? Or does it matter if it's no loss Penn State, two loss Ohio State? You guys tell me what you think. Or do you just think Tennessee needs to worry about one, you to worry about yourself, but two, worry about only SEC teams because there's going to be X amount that get in.
Brent, I think you need to look at a little bit of everything. I mean, yeah, obviously what AP said, worry about yourself, but I mean, Ohio State's not just oozing confidence right now. Anybody that watches them around the country, it's not like this is the Ohio State from a couple of years ago. I say, root for Penn State to beat Ohio State, in my opinion, make things difficult when it comes down to it. But I mean, at the end of the day, worry about yourself and of course worry about your league, but I'd say, yeah, root for Penn State.
Rob Lewis, what do you say?
I like the SEC getting four in minimum, and I just don't think Alabama's jumping Tennessee head-to-head. I mean, I think if you're Tennessee, you root for Alabama. I mean, I think you want to tag LSU with their loss, knock them out. And the interesting thing to me would be if Texas beats Texas A&M, Georgia beats Tennessee, Alabama beats LSU, what do you do? You got five – 10-2 teams, or not 5-10-2. You get 3-10-2. Georgia and Texas are in. You're looking at Alabama, Texas A&M, Tennessee, 10-2. I like Tennessee the best out of those three because of the head-to-head win over Alabama.
Off of that, you would probably say the resume is going to favor Texas A&M, though, because their losses will have been to Texas and then Notre Dame, who in this theory, right, let's roll off the idea that they win them out and they're 11-1, two teams that are in the playoff. And then it gets back, this goes back straight to head-to-head.
Well, Tennessee, that's what I'm saying. That's why I like Tennessee's better, because that's the only one of those three that's going to have a head-to-head win. I think you just check that box and move them on, and then you're comparing Alabama and Texas A&M.
Is Ole Miss done? Or no, let me rephrase this. Ole Miss is going to be done in 2 weeks whenever they lose to Georgia. But Ole Miss, the transfer portal champions, are they done?
They're done unless they run the table. So, no, they're not done yet. But if they lose another one, they're definitely done. And I think, you know, again, you're playing Georgia. If you win this week against Arkansas, you somehow beat Georgia in Oxford. You know, you could make a case for them making a late rally here. But, you know, what gives you confidence in that? Like, I mean, it's, you know, they're playing kind of lethargic. Just doesn't seem real That just don't seem like they have a whole lot of juice. So I think this Arkansas game this weekend is interesting for them. That game in Oxford, or is it in
it's in Fayetteville.
It's in Fayetteville. God, it feels like Arkansas has been at home for like ever. I know they played at Mississippi State this past weekend, but I feel like they've had a ton of home games, and they play Texas at home, I think, next week. So, I mean, like, they've had a ton of huge home games down the stretch here.
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting with Ole Miss is Ole Miss is not as good in the line of scrimmage as I thought they would be. I thought they would be a better team in the trenches. They've struggled to run the ball. Can Arkansas put offense together back-to-back weeks? Can the quarterback play the way he played, you know, back-to-back weeks? Ole Miss had a hard time tackling the quarterback early in the game against Oklahoma. They let Jackson Arnold run around a good bit. You know that their emphasis is going to be on stopping, you know, Taylen Green from running around everywhere. We'll see what Ole Miss looks like. Again, I mean, if you're college football, you got 22 minutes here of talking about every what-if scenario, right? And that's the beauty of this. As we move into what has become, instead of November just getting to the finish line, because typically at this point in the season, you know three of the four playoff teams.
Yep. Right?
Yep.
You know where you're at. November doesn't really resonate, doesn't have a whole lot to do. Now suddenly you're interested. I mean, you're sitting here talking about the ACC. You got Pitt. Who does SMU have left to play? I mean, they haven't lost a conference game. They're a one-loss team.
They play Pitt this weekend.
You know, so there's an elimination game. Now you're paying attention to a bunch of other games because you're trying to figure out who should I root for, who should I not root for, what helps my team, what doesn't help my team, which makes the month of November a better month in college football than what we've seen the last few years. When you knew the last few years, hey, guess what? Alabama's in, Ohio State's in, Georgia's in, now who's going to be the fourth team?
How do you even get that schedule in the ACC?
I was going to say.
How do you have a schedule with no Miami, no Virginia Tech, no Clemson? I mean, that is terrible different levels. I mean, I know you just play the teams in front of you, but geez.
What's going to be fascinating with the ACC is I haven't looked at it. Their tiebreaker is going to be really convoluted and crazy, potentially. That's why SMU – blocking a game-winning field goal attempt at Duke and winning a game where they turned it over six times, is it a significant win, right, for SMU and where that thing sets and what that could potentially look like from a tiebreaker standpoint? I think down the stretch of the ACC is going to be pretty wild in terms of who's going to play in the championship game, what is all the tiebreaker scenarios to get there. Does somebody get left out?
Could it benefit Miami or Clemson to not play in the championship game?
Well, but here's the thing. On this podcast last week, we talked about, now I believe the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get taken care of, right, with their conference championship loser still getting in the playoff. Well, what about the ACC championship game loser? Do they get in? Because are you going to punish them for playing in the championship game? You know, all of those scenarios are going to be pretty, pretty interesting to watch as the first round of the rankings come out. And then we get down to how big are style points? Where are we with strength of schedule? What is this committee who puts itself in a room in Dallas or whatever really going to sit down and look at when you're trying to rank these teams?
I think a two-loss SEC championship team that goes on and plays in that game in Atlanta and you lose that game and that's your third loss. I mean, that is so tough because clearly you're one of the two best teams in the league that should be getting four in if this is the conversation, right? And then you lose that and you get three losses on there. Like, are they going to go ahead and assume those two teams are going to be in and not necessarily take that game into consideration? And then it's like, okay, well, then why play the game? Well, because another team might need it in another year. I think that is a situation where, especially in the SEC, where it's going to loom so much larger if you have that situation where you lose and like trying to determine, are you going to take this team or not? I know it's not the same situation, the ACC, but like if SMU loses another game, they should be out. That schedule's trash. It's absolutely trash.
Agreed.
But that's not the same situation, obviously, for these teams in the SEC. So I think, again, it's nothing we haven't already talked about. I just think that's going to be something, how the committee plans to handle that, if that were to happen, it's going to be really interesting.
It's going to happen at some point in time.
Yeah.
Whether it's the SEC or Big Ten or something, it's going to happen at some point in time. And you're, I mean, it's crazy. Cause I mean, do you say we're not going to, these are our two teams and why play the game? And if you do that, I mean, why not sit, your best guys? There's no way that doesn't get factored in. And I'm not just talking about the SEC or it's going to happen to somebody at some point in time. It's going to be a tiebreaker.
Again, if I'm Tennessee, take care of your business yourself. And be a big Shane Beamer fan this week. I think you want South Carolina, that defensive line, if they play well, night game in Columbia and they knock Texas A&M off, to me, all of a sudden, then Tennessee is really in a good spot, in my opinion, as long as they don't just totally lay an egg in Athens, Georgia, if they go 10-2, because the SEC is going to get X amount of teams in, and, they'll have the head-to-head over Alabama, and A&M will have a second loss and would have it, to South Carolina and Notre Dame. And then, of course, they still have to play Texas. The facts are, though, if Texas A&M wins that game, the likelihood is that whoever gets to Atlanta is probably going to be 2-1 loss teams. Probably the winner of Texas yeah. A&M playing the winner of Tennessee, Georgia. Agreed? I mean, that'd be a pretty good shot of that.
I agree with that.
Tennessee could get knocked off by Vanderbilt. Obviously Ole Miss could beat Georgia. There could be other games, but you start looking at it and it just makes sense that at least somebody's getting there with one loss.
This makes November so much fun, so much fun. I mean, this is just year number one and all these different scenarios and everything. Teams alive with two losses. For Tennessee, though, going back to what you said earlier, Austin, control your own destiny. I mean, you win the rest of your games, you're in. No ifs, ands, buts about it. You lose a game, say it's at Georgia. What's that loss look like? And what else is happening around the country? We'll find out. But you win that game. You take care of business against Kentucky, Mississippi State, Georgia, UTEP, and Vanderbilt against Pavia, then you're gonna be in good shape. Tennessee basketball was an exhibition play over the weekend. Rob Lewis was in house. When he gets his thoughts on what Rick Barnes's 10th season at Tennessee could look like with this basketball team that's coming up next. We continue on here with the VolQuest podcast presented by our great friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man. I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, we want to thank our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being a part of the show, 865-524-5888 online. At exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, crossover season is here. Game number one is coming up later on. It's next Monday, right, Rob? Next Monday?
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday is game number one, but exhibition play was here for Tennessee. They had a closed-door scrimmage against Davidson last Sunday. This past Sunday, it was Indiana and Tennessee, a 66-62 defeat. Rob Lewis, you were in-house. A lot to digest, obviously, but a couple big takeaways from your first time seeing this team in action.
Yeah, I mean, first off, just don't put a lot of stock in the final score. I mean, I'm not saying Tennessee didn't play to win, but October offensive basketball is not a pretty sight to behold, and that was certainly the case yesterday. I was just interested to really get my first look outside of Pratt Pavilion, outside of the practice court of the newcomers, and tough shooting day for Chaz Lanier, 3 of 16, but I think a lot of that was probably pressing. I mean, it wasn't a SEC environment in there, but I'm sure he wanted to impress the home fans. And it was definitely 10,000-12,000 people in there. It was over halfway full on a Sunday afternoon in NFL season. So I think Chaz was definitely pressing a little bit, wanted to show the home crowd, what he could do. But I can promise you, after he's been, in the program for, 4 or 5 months now in the gym, nobody's concerned about his shooting ability. Liked what you saw from Felix Okpara a lot. I mean, really an emphatic, physical, athletic shot blocker, which is exactly, what Tennessee was looking for when they got him, and he looked the part against an athletic Indiana front line. Like Igor Milicic, think he's really versatile. Think that's going to be an interesting combo. And, just my biggest takeaway is I think they're they're deeper in the post than last year. I think they got some real flexibility there. And Zakai Ziegler, you know, didn't shoot it great. Nobody shot it great, but 8 assists and just a floor general. I mean, I've said it before and we've talked about it, but it's been a long time since there's been like one older guy on a team, whether football or basketball, where it was so clearly his team. And that's definitely the case, you know, here.
Rob, when you look at them Tennessee offensively, obviously they didn't shoot it well. I'm curious about Akpara and kind of I saw him just as an offensive rebound kind of putback guy coming into that. But I thought he had a couple of moments where he really sealed and pinned well on the block to either get to the free throw line or to get a layup. He had a nice little turnaround in the lane. I mean, how much more of an offensive weapon can he be than what you thought he would be when Tennessee took him out of the portal?
Yeah, a lot more. And that's not just yesterday. I mean, we've seen it on the practice floor too, but he's a guy that I wasn't sure Tennessee would, you know, ever call an offensive set for. And, you know, they called a couple early yesterday. I remember the one you're talking about, Hubbard. He sealed, got into the lane with a little lefty jump hook and got an and one and finished it. So, I mean, he's not going to be a, 20-point game score, but he is a guy that you can call some plays for. You can dump it down in there, and people have to respect that, which is important, when you want to space the floor like Tennessee does. And, it maybe sounds silly to say it when Tennessee was 8 of 35 from the floor or from three yesterday. But I do think they're going to be a decent three-point shooting team. I mean, obviously, you don't have a Dalton Connect flamethrower type guy out there, but I do think Tennessee is going to be able to put multiple guys out there that they can really spread the floor. And I think they're going to be an explosive offensive team. I mean, again, coming off a 62-point effort where they shot 33% for the day from three, that maybe sounds silly, but I think they have a chance to be pretty good offensively.
Rob, we talked about a couple of newcomers in Milicic and Akpara. What about Darlin Stone Dubar? Played in about 6 minutes or so, -6 in the plus-minus. I think I saw a note from Grant saying that, maybe he's got a ways to go. Would you agree with that? And kind of what did you think about his performance in the exhibition?
I don't really think it's as much about him as the other guys. And I don't want to be – I'm not trying to be critical of Darlin Stone. I mean, we're talking about one exhibition game in October. Yeah. Lots can change. I mean, basketball season is a marathon. I mean, I don't know what his role will be in January, but just right now, I don't think that he's going to take minutes at the four from Milicic or Cade Phillips or JP Estrella when he slides in there and does that. I'm not saying he couldn't potentially play out on the wing, but that's a crowded situation too. When you're talking about Meshack, Chaz Lanier, Cam Carr. The guy, Jordan Ganey, I mean, four guys that are going to play a lot. So I don't think it's a negative necessarily about Darlin Stone. I think Tennessee envisioned him as a guy that was going to play that Josiah Jordan James, small ball four role. And frankly, I think Milicic is maybe a little bit more versatile than they thought. And, you don't really need to go small to space the floor when you have Igor. I mean, he's got to be respected from out there, and he's a much bigger body. So, I don't think it's a negative. I just think Tennessee's, like I said a minute ago, one of my biggest takeaways is they are pretty versatile and deep in the post. I mean, they got four guys that, I think can be pretty impactful. As last year, Jonas, you never knew from, he might give you 20. You might not know he was, on the floor. Tobey was, everybody loved him, but, it was a foul fest, every as many offensive rebounds as fouls. So, I like Tennessee's front court in this one. And I just think, Dubar to me looks like the fifth guy right now.
Rob, could it have been a better scenario for Rick Barnes than for his team to be in a tight basketball game down the stretch? And you're looking around going, okay, who's going to go score? Who's going to go make a play? Because listen, everybody's going to talk about Dalton Connect. Yeah, they missed Dalton Connect. Of course they missed Dalton Connect, right? Like he could score, he could do a lot of things. But how important is it for Tennessee to kind of establish kind of where they're going when you got to have a bucket? Because a year ago, maybe not at this time, but it wasn't long after this time a year ago that you went, we're going to run a clear out for Connect and let him go to work. So how big was it for them to have that scenario out of the gate in an exhibition game of, okay, where are we going to go get a bucket down four with two to play or in those various situations that they were in?
Yeah, man, I think it was really beneficial. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, Hubbard, you know Coach Barnes as well as I do. I mean, nobody hates to lose
right
more than that guy. And he was not remotely upset yesterday. I mean, he got exactly what he wanted out of that game. You know, it was his team got pushed, you know, on both ends of the floor. You know, they probably found out that all these things he'd been yelling at him about on the practice floor matter, you know. And it'll find out, you know, for sure in film study. And, yeah, I mean, I think that was beneficial. I tell you what I think was also beneficial is, you know, we're going to, you know, the first thing I think about is the last, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of execution, how hard it was to find a bucket. What he's going to think about, or I know what he already was thinking about, is Indiana shot 52% in the second half.
Yeah.
Should in his mind, should have never come down to, we know, sure, we got to get a bucket. But, no, I think it is beneficial. And I think they are going to figure that out because – you know, your default thing, you're obviously going to put the ball in Zakai's hands, but, you know, is you always want a 5'9 guy having to take the last shot in a game. And, I mean, you want him to create it. You want it to start there. But I don't know what the answer is, you know, right now. And, I think they were certainly looking at some of that in-game stuff. I mean, it starts with Zakai, but, I mean, you're not always going to want him taking a step-back three, you know, with 3 seconds left in those situations.
Well, and you hope that Lanier is going to be a part of that, yep, equation, a part of that factor. But obviously, there were some lessons to be learned from that yesterday, which is what October basketball. These games are so much more beneficial than some of the other stuff that they've done through the years. I hope that this continues to be a trend.
No disrespect, DC, so much better than playing Carson Newman. I mean, like you're saying, I mean, so much better for everybody.
Yeah, and no disrespect to those other teams.
Not at all.
Like, listen, I mean, how big was it for Indiana to get to come down here and play this game? The same way it was big for Tennessee a year ago at Michigan State and yesterday. I mean, keep doing these games. Benefit whoever they want to benefit or whatever they want to do with them to make it work. But keep playing these games because this helps teams get better. And Rick Barnes has said this, and I agree with this. This helps officiating get better. Okay, I mean, get in a game like that instead of, you know, a 60-point blowout win where there's nothing to gain from it. I mean, so I hope that they play. Yeah. I wish they play a couple of these every year.
The head coach wishes they play four or five of them.
Yeah, because I just think they're so much more beneficial than the other stuff.
Brent brought it up right there, Rob. But obviously, there's, you know, Grant wrote a story about it. I know it's a big topic of conversation after the exhibition. But I think it was a little over 7 minutes, whatever it was. Tennessee was up by four. Lanier checks out and he doesn't go back in. Lessons learned, as Brent pointed out. Kind of what do you make of that situation that Lanier was on the pine there for the last handful of minutes?
This is not even a big deal at all. I mean, I'm sure you have fans will want to talk about it. And I don't know this because I'm not in the locker room, but I doubt that was even the kind of thing that created a big ripple inside the locker room. I'm not saying people didn't notice, but I'm sure, you know, Chaz probably knew exactly why he was on the bench. And also, it's not as though he was, you know, had 25 points and was stroking it. I think had that been the case, maybe he would have been on the floor in the last 7 minutes if he hadn't been three for 16. So, but I don't think it's a big deal at all. And I think that, you know, I think you're going to see that kid play a lot of really good basketball for Tennessee. But the defensive issue, I'm not trying to completely poo-poo it. It's real. I mean, his minutes are going to be affected by that. I'm not saying he's not going to play at all, but there are going to be nights where Rick does, you know, send him a little message, I'm sure.
Outside of obviously having a better shooting day, making more shots, higher percentages, making more baskets than the other team, what's a big area of growth this team's got to work through the first couple weeks of the season?
Well, I mean, I didn't think ball security was bad yesterday at all, but anytime you've got, you know, this many new guys that haven't played together before, I mean, I think that's got to be a point of emphasis, you know, early, and it always is early in the season. I mean, Tennessee had 15 turnovers yesterday. That's not terrible, you know, especially against an athletic team, but that's just something I would always keep an eye on early in the season, but especially when you got this many new guys. And I'm going to be curious to see how that post rotation, you know, works out. Or, you know, are all those Oak Parra definitely is, you know, a five and only a five? Are the other three kind of, you know, interchangeable, I guess? Can, you know, can JP play the four? You know, how do minutes get divvied up there? Are the starters, are Igor and Felix clearly, you know, going to get 25, you know, 26 minutes a game, or is it more even? I just, I'm kind of intrigued by how that's going to work out, because I think JP and Cade can be some nice players. I wouldn't have thought it would have been a terrible thing if that was Tennessee's starters, you know, last April. So to have those guys be reserves in this day and age or transfers, I think that's a luxury.
Rob, transition defense, 18 fast break points given up. We all know what that drill's coming on the practice floor. but that one, of all the defensive stats, that one probably sticks in Rick's craw more than anything. Is they just gave up some bunt. They gave up some easy ones, and that's. You got to get a half court set.
They did, and this was also a bad thing. Indiana had 9 steals, which is a big number. So I think a lot of those turnovers were in kind of those broken floor live ball situations. I'm not excusing it. I mean, still, you know, it's sloppy to have the opponent give 9 steals, but I think you know cleaning up ball security is part of that. But yeah, I mean, that's an enormous number for Tennessee to give up in transition points, Hubbard. And I'm sure, I know that one's stuck in the head coach's craw.
So Tennessee and Indiana exhibition play, 66-62 was that final score. Tennessee will move on to games that count beginning next Monday. It is at 7:00 against Gardner-Webb, November the 4th. And we'll have full coverage right here from Rob and Grant, of course, at VolQuest.com.
Eric,
a lot going on right now this week.
Eric, I got to ask you before we get out of here. I mean, we've talked about exhibition basketball. We talked a lot about football, everything. You were in Nashville Friday night for it's still – hats off to Tony Vitello. It's still mind-boggling to me that Carnival Roadshow can go across the state and sell out venues and create the buzz that they've created. Of course, you're the defending national champs, but it's October exhibition baseball in Nashville. You were there for that. What did you learn about Tony Vitello's baseball team? That's going to be a very different team than a year ago. What do you take away from seeing them against other competition versus, you know, orange and white scrimmages that you've seen in Lindsey Nelson Stadium?
Yeah. First and foremost, there was another baseball scrimmage happening in that same town that didn't have hardly anybody there. There was a lot of people at First Horizon Park, though, for sure. Tennessee fans love a winner, and that's what Tony Vitello is. This team's going to hit. Andrew Fisher, the transfer third baseman, I tweeted out, like, he had that first inning home run, and I said maybe that was his 30th home run of the fall. Like, I was only partially kidding. I mean, the dude has been hitting home runs. He's going to hit 30 home runs this year. He might strike out a ton as well, but he's going to be hitting in that heart of the order. He's going to be driving in some runs. I think Dean Curley's versatility, not only in the field, but in the lineup, is something that is going to be neat and fun to watch. He can hit 2. He can hit down to 6. I think that's going to be interesting. Jay Abernathy's a freshman, true freshman, and, you know, he's going to have a role on this team somewhere. Now, is it going to be as a designated hitter? Is it going to be as a defensive replacement late in innings? Is it going to be as a pinch runner? Maybe all of the above. Jay Abernathy is a name that, you know, for Tennessee baseball fans, that's a name you need to learn, because he's going to play an awful lot. He's got good contact. He can hit for power. He's got defensive versatility, outfield, second base. He's more of an outfielder. But, this team, I think, is going to be a good hitting team, as Tony Vitello's teams are. I think they've got some questions to work through on the mound for sure. Liam Doyle, who I noted in the war room that is down, around 20 pounds or so, and his velo's been ticking up here this fall. That's tip of the cap to him. It's tip of the cap to the nutrition staff, and of course Quentin Eberhardt and what the Tennessee strength staff does. He's your one. He's your Friday night guy. You're trying to figure out the other two spots on the weekend. Of course, AJ Russell's, recovering from Tommy John, and he'll be available at some point, but not at the beginning. Tekken Coons is a guy that's a true freshman that I think everybody's very impressed with, throwing from the right side, and I think he's in position right now to maybe be one of those guys. And then from there, is it you got some guys like Marcus Phillips, Dylan Lloyd, Nate Snead, who can be a starter, but for Tennessee to be as good as they can be, Dylan Lloyd needs to be the new Kirby, a multi-inning guy throughout a weekend. Marcus Phillips, if he can learn control, then who knows how good he can be. Nate Snead, we know all about him. There's very much some open spots in terms of those starting rotations, but a lot of, Brandon Arvidsson's going to be a guy that's going to help Tennessee. Tanner Wiggins, when he's healthy, he's going to help Tennessee. It's good to see a lot of these new faces and kind of the demeanor and all that, but it looked like a typical Tennessee baseball team, a team that hit the ball well, exude confidence, and showed a ton of promise on the mound there. And, of course, these exhibitions are a little bit different. You go 2 innings here, 1 inning here. It was good to see. It looked like Tennessee was, you know, back on track around about where they need to be this time of the year.
Fun to see, and fun to see where they kind of progress and what they look like. Fun to see where this basketball team and how they're going to grow moving forward, you know, throughout the winter. As Rob said, it's a marathon and certainly not a sprint, and there's no greater marathon than college baseball, as you well know. So, I mean, fun times. I mean, it certainly doesn't seem to be any drop-off there. Not sure that those two teams are going to make Elite Eights and you know, the final series of the College World Series, but they're going to have a chance to be there if certain things fall their way. So it'll be fun to watch. And, of course, obviously we'll see where this football team is on Saturday with Kentucky coming to town and Tennessee in a situation where November means as much as it's ever meant to Tennessee. The question now is, can Tennessee grow and continue to play the way that they need to here to close out the month of November and put themselves in a position to be a playoff team?
Yeah, whether it's football recruiting, whether it's basketball, whether it's fall baseball, we got it all covered for you right here at VolQuest.com on the Journal's Quarters. Your one-stop shop for literally everything you need Tennessee athletics, from those who set the standard in covering the Tennessee Volunteers. That's Brent, Austin, Grant, Rob, Matt, myself here at VolQuest.com. A big thanks to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. A free estimate, give them a call today at 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com as well. Big thanks for being the presenting sponsor of this show. A big thank you for joining us here on the VolQuest podcast. We'll be back on Thursday for the Mailbag podcast. So until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.